This is Digital Story Podcast number 578, April 4th, 2017. Today's theme is Becoming Part of the Story. I'm Derek Story. I find it interesting that photographers are often absent from the stories they tell. Whether it be a family vacation, a gathering with friends, or a somber occasion, we tend to record everyone but ourselves. But as the storyteller, we are most likely part of the narrative too. And exploring how we can better integrate ourselves is the subject of today's show. It would be so easy to blame this on selfies. And what I mean by that is that most serious photographers don't want to be caught photographing themselves with their iPhone. But when you think about it, why not? If we capture an image of us interacting with others in the story or on location, why is that a bad thing? It doesn't mean that we're a narcissist. So this came to mind this weekend as I was testing my first ever real selfie stick. And I had never used a selfie stick for me before. And I was testing the Mi Photo Center column, which I'll talk about in the next piece. But I was testing it out on location. And so let me tell you the story of how this all came about, because this is why we're talking about this right now. So I knew I wanted to go on a hike on Sunday, and I had to drop my boy off at school. And so we decided to come back the long way up Highway 35 that's up above Palo Alto. And it's just really a beautiful area, especially in the spring. So on the first stop, you know, get out to get some fresh air, go to the bathroom, things like that. There's all sorts of open space areas along 35. So you've got all sorts of, choices in terms of where to stop and what to explore and where to hike. On the very first stop, I got out and I'm walking around and this guy comes up to me and he says, "Hey, are you the leader of the earthquake talk?" I guess I looked, you know, like someone that would do that. And I said, "No, but there's an earthquake talk." And he said, yeah, there's a professor that's going to lead a talk on the San Andreas Fault, which we were, you know, virtually standing on. The San Andreas Fault just runs all up and down this area. So we go, how cool is that? We all wanted to do it. So we decided to go for it. So the professor shows up and he's gathering the group and he looked like an interesting fellow. And I had my camera with me, of course. And I go, okay, I'm gonna record this. I may use it, I may not use it, but I'm gonna take stills all the way through. So I had the Pentax KP, and so I got that out, and I'm shooting some shots of people gathering, and you know, some of the scenics around, and all that kind of stuff. And I was gonna keep shooting throughout, you know, the whole hike and everything that he was doing, the professor. There was a little bit while we were still waiting for some folks to come, and I go, all right, I need to do a shot of me, and let me do it over by this really wonderful sign at the trailhead. It really tells a story. There's me, there's this beautiful area, and then there's a sign that actually says where we are. And so I took out the center column on the Mi Photo, and has a little Bluetooth trigger, and I put my iPhone on it, and it's bright red, because I got the bright red one. And I'm about, I don't know, 15, 20 yards away from the group, standing up on this little bluff where the sign is, holding the phone up, lining it up so that I could take a picture of me with the sign and the scenery in the background. And it was a shot that I absolutely should have been doing, right, as part of the story. Yet, I was totally self-conscious doing it. I mean, I was constantly looking over to see if people were watching me, and I was thinking, God, you know, they're probably thinking, all this guy cares about is, you know, taking pictures of himself. Here, we've got the Stanford professor here, and we're going to learn about the San Andreas Fault, and this is really going to be, you know, a terrific opportunity to pick up some geology information and all this, and this guy's over there taking pictures of himself. Totally self-conscious about it. But I knew I had to do it because I wanted that shot in with everything else. So I did it, took the shot, and it worked great. I love the shot, by the way. And in fact, when I got home that night and I was reviewing all the shots from the hike and the professor holding up a big map, you know, pointing out geological things that we need to know about and all that, the shot of me by the trailhead with the wonderful scenery in the background is one of the shots that I like. It's one of my favorites. And I was really happy that I took it. And I was thinking, but I was so self-conscious doing it. And that just seemed wrong. Why was I so self-conscious about doing this? And so I thought, okay, I better, let's explore this a bit here. And so what I wanted to do was come up with five reasons for me not to be self-conscious about taking selfies, convincing myself that I'm not a teenage girl obsessed with her hair and her makeup, that I'm a legitimate storyteller and that I am part of the story. So that's what we're going to talk about right now. I'm going to give you, here are the five reasons that I came up with to convince myself that it was all right to take a picture of myself with a selfie stick in front of this group. All right, first one. The artist is often as interesting as the art that he or she creates. And I think this is totally true. And where this became very clear to me was as an undergraduate, as an English major. I really liked literature. I still do. It's fascinating to me. But when I knew that I had the right major was actually in junior college, when I had this professor that was just great at reading these works to us as a class. And that's what he would do. He would read to us during class. And it was wonderful. He would read the works. But then even better, after he read the works, he would tell us anecdotes about the artist. He would tell us about James Joyce or Percy Shelley, going, wow. He'd tell us about Lord Byron. He'd go, really? You know, and I was just captivated. This was like better than anything I saw on TV. This is better than any movie. This was really cool stuff. And as I got deeper into my major, I really discovered that a big part of my fascination was not only with the art that these writers produced, but I was fascinated with them as people. And I started thinking about photographers, and you know, photographers are a pretty interesting bunch too. We're different, but you know, so are writers. And I hang around a lot of photographers, and you can't generalize about any group, right? But you know, one thing that I've noticed that I run into every now and then with photographers is their dry sense of humor. A lot of times they're colorful in their appearance, definitely, you know, marching to their own drum. And just in general, I think photographers are interesting people. I'm fascinated by them as well. And I was thinking, okay, if these guys and gals are storytellers and they're telling the story, well, they're at least as interesting themselves as anyone that they're talking about, unless they're really talking about someone super fascinating. That is a legitimate reason for them, for me, to be part of the story, because as storytellers, as artists, as photographers, which is our own flavor of art, we are interesting creatures, and we should be part of that series of shots. Next one. So often in movies and TV shows, the storyteller actually tells the story, right? They do voiceover, very popular technique. And, you know, once you're aware of it, you'll hear it all the time. In fact, I may have just ruined a lot of shows for you by telling you about this. But it's true. Why is that? Why do we have this voiceover so often in these TV shows and movies? And it's because it's interesting, right? You get the perspective of the person telling the story. And they may be on camera and we get the voiceover, or they may not be on camera and we get the voiceover. But either way, we're definitely getting a part of them, a different part of them than just what is acted out on the screen. This adds interest. This is why it's done. It adds interest to the whole thing, because even with the quality of their voice and even with how they phrase things, we learn things about the story that we might not had we just watched the actors on the screen. And I think that this is part of what we're talking about today. It is another way and another reason why we want the storyteller to be physically part of the story, even if they're not on camera. Next point, if you're the photographer in the family and you never include yourself in the images, then have you really done a good job of recording history? Think about it, right? If you have all these family photos, right? People eating and interacting and hugging and you know, opening gifts together and doing all this stuff, and you're not in any of those shots, or there aren't shots of you in the same setting, in the same location, at the same event, have you really done a very good job of telling the story? Because you're probably a family member too. I mean, most families don't hire a professional photographer to shoot Sally's 33rd birthday, right? It's usually a family member, and it's usually you. Part of your responsibility, in addition to everything else that we've talked about, is to make sure that you're in the shots. Now, this doesn't have to mean necessarily that you're turning the iPhone towards you and taking shots that way. You could hand your camera to somebody else and say, hey, take a picture of me, da da da. All that, you know, we know how to do this, right? And it's not like handing a camera to a stranger in Manhattan, right? It's a lot safer to hand it to a family member and say, hey, let me take a picture with Aunt Sally here. It's her birthday, and, you know, I want to be part of the story. But in order to be what I consider a good historian, if that's one of the things that you do, if that's one of the hats that you wear, then you have to make sure that you find a way to have yourself in the shots. And I'm not just talking about the group shot. Yes, the group shot, you can put it on tripod, do self-timer, jump in there. Yes, you should do that. But you want to make an appearance more often than just the group shot. Because it doesn't tell us that much about you. Whereas if we see you talking to Aunt Sally, if we see you interacting with other people, if we see your body language, you know, next to your brother and sister and so forth, then we learn a lot more about you than we would learn in just a group shot. We want the group shot, but for historical purposes, we want the other shots too. Also, there's an art to self-portraiture that's worth learning. And, you know, some photographers have really made a name for themselves through self-portraiture. And then other photographers haven't done it that often, let's say Ansel Adams. But when we see a portrait that he took of himself, we're going, wow, that is really interesting. And I think it's different when we take a portrait of ourselves, when we really set it up to do a portrait of ourselves, as opposed to having someone else do a portrait of us. Because it's always an equation, right? Every photo is an equation. It's a combination of who's taking the picture and what's happening and who's in the picture. When we are both taking the picture and we are the subject of the shot, that equation is much different than having someone else take the shot of us. And I think we can learn even more about ourselves, and we can share even more about ourselves by being on both sides of the camera. And I think this is a fascinating thing to do. And of course, in this case, I'm talking more about putting the camera on a tripod and then setting up a scene. It could be in your studio, or it could be anywhere. A lot of times photographers do self-portraits in their own studios or wherever they work, because that is also part of the story, right? That vibe and what's in the background and all that kind of stuff. But the choices that you make to set up the shot, and then having complete control over the pick, basically what you're telling the world is, this is how I see myself. This is how I see myself, and I'm sharing this with you. And people sense that. People know that, wow, this is a self-portrait, and this is how Derek sees himself, and this is how he wants to present himself to the rest of the world. That is different than these other types of shots that we're talking about. And there is an art to this, and there is something fascinating about it, because it is an equation of one, and in this case, of us as individuals. So something, again, to think about, something, again, to have in the mix. This is not part of a slideshow or anything. This is a one-off shot that we do every now and then, hopefully throughout our lives, and something that other people can look at not only while we're around, but also when we're not around. And finally, there's a very practical reason to do all this. And now we're going to hop back to using your smartphone and possibly a selfie stick to do a portrait of yourself. And that Okay, let's go back to where I was on the hike, the earthquake hike. I'm shooting with my Pentax, which I'm, you know, really bonding with this camera. I really like it, having it in the mix. But it doesn't record geo data, and I'm not going to get a module for it. And quite honestly, I don't think the battery could take it if I did. Those shots are terrific. They're high resolution. They're beautiful, all that kind of stuff. But there's no geo data with them. If I take a shot of me standing by the sign, as I did, with my iPhone 6S on the selfie stick, then I'm capturing other things too. And in my case, I'm capturing weather data, temp, and so forth, and I'm actually capturing geo data, so the exact location of where I'm standing, or in this case, where the hike started. So then if I mix that shot in with the rest of the shots, then it's very easy to add that geo data to the other shots so that all the other images from that series can also include the basic location data and the basic weather data, in addition to the timestamp and all the other XF data. So practically speaking, it's very nice to have, you know, if it's a shot of an open meadow, well, there's a lot of open meadows in California. You know, maybe at first I will remember, maybe forever I'll remember, but maybe I won't remember forever. There'll probably be a time when I'm really happy that that geo data is embedded in the shot. And it might not be the exact spot where I took the shot, but it will be where the hike started. And then I can, oh yeah, that's up there, Highway 35. So that is my practical reason also for including yourself in the shot. Now, of course, you could accomplish the same thing by just taking a picture of the meadow with your iPhone and not putting yourself in it. But why would you want to take a picture of a meadow with your iPhone? That's when you want to use your DSLR or your mirrorless, right? Whereas it's much harder for me, at least with the Pentax, to take a picture of myself where I can have the selfie stick and I have the Bluetooth trigger and I can hold it up and everything. So it's sort of also using the right tool for the job. So those are the five reasons that I gave myself why it was okay for me to be taking some pictures of myself while I was capturing this story. If you fall into the same category that I described about me and pointing the camera towards yourself, I hope this first segment of today's show will help you overcome it, because as I said, when it was all said and done, I'm really glad I took that picture up on that hill with all those other people standing around. I might have been self-conscious, but I love the shot. The Mi Photo Air on assignment. So what I used to take this infamous shot of myself that I was just talking about in the previous story was my Mi Photo Road Trip Air. And one of the things that makes this tripod different than the previous Mi Photo that I owned is that it has built-in capability to use the center column as a selfie stick. And it includes two things. One, there's a little pouch inside the main pouch that has a spring bracket, great for smartphones. So basically, this little collapsible spring bracket connects to the tripod head, and then you can stick just about any size a smartphone in there. You know, your Android device, your iOS device, whatever. It looks like just about everything will fit in there. In my case, I put the iPhone 6S in there. Then what you have, and this is the part that really makes it all work. So you take out the center column, it extends, so you have a little bit of reach. You have your iPhone or your Android device on the end of it, but how do you trigger it? You don't want to use self-timer. So what they have is a little trigger, and you can see it in the shots that I've done of it. It's a little trigger that clips to the center column, and it's a Bluetooth device. And so the way the Bluetooth device works is that you turn on the Bluetooth device, this little trigger, it has an on-off switch. Once you turn it on, then you go, in my case, I went to the iPhone, I went to settings, I went to Bluetooth, and then it's searching for Bluetooth devices. It saw the Mi Photo trigger, it shows up as Mi Photo. I just say connect on the iPhone, and then it's ready to go. So once I've connected, now I just extend the phone out and I make sure I have the camera that faces back at me, right? I'm not using it to shoot outward, I'm shooting back at me. So I'm using that camera. And when I get it lined up the way that I want, all I have to do is push the button on the trigger and it triggers the shot. It takes the picture. So it is a Bluetooth design that is specifically made for triggering the camera app. And it works really great because, you know, that's kind of the hard part. Because, you know, it takes a second to line these up. You don't want the pressure of using the self-timer to kind of line it up and then have the self-timer go off, have it not be correct. So the trigger makes all the difference in the world. Now, the thing that I like about the shot compared to when I just hold my arm out and again try to trip the shutter without dropping the phone is that my arm isn't in the shot. Because I have that center column extended, my arm then is kind of at an angle and I'm holding it and my arm isn't in the shot. So I just have a nice shot of my head and my shoulders, and then I don't press the shutter button until the shot is lined up. Bang, you just nail it, and it just works really well. And then when you're done, all you have to do is take off the little spring bracket that's holding your phone. It fits nicely back in its pouch, which is inside your overall Mi Photo pouch that has the drawstring that I'm just crazy about. You put the center column back on the tripod, and then you just make sure that you turn off the trigger. You move the switch from on to off, and then it's back to being a regular tripod. So this adds a lot of functionality to this device. I think as a selfie stick, it looks great because it looks professional. It looks like, oh, he's using his tripod center column as a selfie stick. How clever is he? Right? If you want to learn more about the Mi Photo Road Trip Air, I have a tile on all the pages of the digital story. It's very colorful. You can't miss it. Click on it. It takes you over to our landing page. You can look at everything that's on there. If you see something that you like, again, I really like the Road Trip, but there's also the Backpacker and there's the Globetrotter models. There's like 7 different colors. If you see something that you want, if you use coupon code THEDIGITALSTORY, all one word, you'll save 10% on your choice and you'll receive free shipping. The Sigma 135mm f1.8 Art Sample Gallery. So DP Review published a gallery and they captured these images with Canon full-frame cameras, the 5D Mark IV, that helped soften the background even more. And they posted those shots on DP Review. Let me read you the intro that they wrote, and then I'll talk a little bit about the pictures themselves. Recently, the new Sigma 135mm f1.8 Art landed in the office, prompting us to get out there and shoot some portraits from a distance. While one of their heavier primes, performance is exceptional wide open with very quick focusing. What about that background blur? Take a look at our samples to find out. So, and I have a link, just like I have a link to everything in the show notes, so you can take a look at this gallery too. But I was pretty impressed, I have to say. You know, these shots, first of all, a lot of times the shots that they run with these kind of articles aren't that interesting, but there's a lot of interesting stuff. And, you know, in terms of background blur, this lens does a nice job. But the other thing that it does a nice job of, because I think sometimes we get a little too hung up on background blur and bokeh and all that. I love the color of the images. I love the sharpness of the subjects. And when I mean sharpness, I mean it's a pleasing sharpness. It's a sharpness that looks like, wow, that's like a really nice portrait of that person or that thing. They're sharp, but they're not, you know, digitally sharp. And the shots are just really pretty. And one of the things that they were doing with this is that they were isolating a subject in an overall composition. So the people or the objects in the foreground to the side would be blurred or soft. And then the objects and people in the background would be blurred or soft. And then the person that was, you know, the main subject would be sharp. And I think that's really neat. In fact, we're doing the San Francisco workshop this coming weekend. I got to remember that technique because I want to do some shots that way too. I really like the way those images look. Overall, I think this is a pretty cool lens. As they mentioned in their opening, it is heavy and it's somewhat large, but do have f1.8. that you can use f1.8 at 135 millimeters, so you know you're going to have some bulk there. So I went over to B&H. The lens is $1,399 for Nikon F, for Canon EF, and for Sigma SA. So only three mounts on this Sigma lens, Canon, Nikon, and then their own mount. $1,399 for all of them. The Nikon is supposed to be available April 25th, the Canon April 6th, and the Sigma April 25th. So later this month, they'll be ready. Interesting lens. If you do a lot of portrait work, or if you do shots where you really like to isolate the subject, and you have one of these three mounts, and you have $1,400 for some new glass, I think it's definitely worth taking a look. It looks gorgeous, and the image quality is fantastic. As I said, I have links to the gallery and to the lenses themselves in the show notes, so if you're interested, go by and take a look. All right, just a few updates here. First of all, we have our San Francisco Street Photography Workshop starting Thursday evening. If you're listening to this on Tuesday or Wednesday, you know what I'm going to be doing on Thursday. And I'm going to be spending the weekend in San Francisco and hanging out with some of our Virtual Camera Club members. Olympus loaned me a Pen F just for this event, so I'll be able to let folks try out the Pen F if they want, which is a great street photography camera. Can't believe that they were able to shake one loose for us to use. And then I have the bags, the shoulder bags from Think Tank, the mirrorless shoulder bags. I think I have the 20s, mirrorless mover 20s. And so everyone's going to get one of those. Now, unlike the Pen F, everyone will get to take the Think Tank bag home. The Pen F, they won't get to take home. Oh, well. And they better not try to run off with it either. They can't come to any more workshops. So I'll be talking a little bit about that workshop and sharing some images in next week's show. But I'm just excited that workshop season's finally getting underway. We have so many great events. And, now we actually get to go take pictures. It's been all planning up to this point. Now we get to go take pictures. I also want to thank our newest Patreon members and then also all the Patreon members that continue to support us, part of our inner circle. And we got some new members this week, which is just so thrilling. I have to tell you, it just makes me smile every time someone new comes by and decides to support this show. So thank you to our new members, and thank you to our existing members of the inner circle. You're helping to keep the lights on for everyone, and I so appreciate it. And I just wanted to let you know that we have still one seat open for our Northern California road trip workshop. That's in May. So if you're interested in that, you can just drop me a note, or you can go over to the TDS workshops page. It's in the nav bar, just says workshops. You can go there and send me a note that way. And finally, I want to thank our friends at Red River Paper, continuing to support the site, continuing to support our efforts to get the word out about printing and how wonderful printing is, and how fun printing is, and how satisfying printing is. And it was funny, I was thinking about that shot that I took of myself this weekend. I think I'm actually going to, do a 5x7 of it. I am. Why not? Right? Why not? Why not go the whole route with this? So anyway, and what I'm working on right now is an ebook on creative printing that's going to be given out to everyone that attends one of my sessions at Out of Chicago. So if you come to the Out of Chicago conference and you attend one of my sessions on printing, sponsored by Red River Paper, they are also underwriting the ebook, and you will get my ebook on creative printing. How cool is that? This is all made possible by the good folks at Red River Paper. They have a tile on all the pages of the Digital Story, our longest running sponsors, and just having so much to do with the many good things that happen for me and for all of our members of the Virtual Camera Club. Alrighty, so that's going to do it for me this week. I'm working on some great stuff for next week, and I'll share a little bit about what goes on at San Francisco Workshop. Thank you for joining me. Have a great week. Come back and join me next week, and we'll talk about some more cool stuff. Until then, bye-bye now.